Okay, hello everybody. Welcome to the review of spring semester 2023 Contemporary Halacha. We're going to go through a number of shiurim. We will not have time to go through all the shiurim because it's absolutely impossible. I will be going relatively quickly, so keep your questions to whatever needs to be asked. Now, as far as the way I'm going to be doing this, my goal is to, when you hear a shiur, sometimes you just hear a lot of points. You don't realize that they're actually sections of each shiur. My goal is not just to review the material, but to break down each shiur to the main four points, or the main four sections, and I'll be very clear to delineate, that's the end of this point, let's go to the next point. So when you hear that means like you should skip a line in your notes or something, or make a new bullet point, there'll be a new topic, and hopefully that way you'll order, not just go over the material, but order the material for you in a way that will be easier for you to chunk. Okay, so let's start with Rabbi Adler's shiur in Hilchos Chol HaMoed. Chazal say hamevaze es hamoados ein lechelik l'olam haba. It doesn't say hamechalo. Mevaze means you're not going to eat a proper kavod, and that means you don't have proper achila, ushtia. The question that we have to deal with, the main question of the shir, is really, is cholamoy mit isur melach on cholamoy mit araisa, or is it mit rabbanan? The Gemara has about four or five drushas that sound like they're all deraisa, but we know that the halachas of cholamoy talk about cholamoy being mutter letzorech hamoed, or I'm sorry, letzorech dabar ha'aved, or tzorech, tzorechei rabim, and how could that be d'oraisa? So therefore we have this tension, is it d'oraisa or is it d'rabbanan? So there are a few rayas that even though the Gemara Mashma has drushes, but Tosfos has three rayas that indicate that it would be d'rabbanan. Number one, we know that the number of aliyos reflect the kedusha, and if there are only four aliyos, not five aliyos, that clearly means it's less kadosh than Yantif. And secondly, the point that I just made, how could you have a hetel davar ha'aved for a daraisa, that the chor is a svar derabanan. And finally, most importantly, is the lashon of the Yishalmi is klum asru malacha el alecha v'lil motorah. The lashon of asru means the chazal asru. So it sounds like it's derabanan, but we have all these daraisas, these psukim. So the easiest way is just to say that, as Tosfos says, that these drushes in the Gemara and Chagiga are only in asmach b'alma. The other way to say it is that they're d'oraisa, perhaps, but the reason why you have these exceptions, like Tzorech HaMoed and Davar HaAved and Tzorechei Rabim, is because Masron HaKosav LaChachamim, like we see in other areas of Shas, the Chachamim were given the parameters to define what will the Isser d'oraisa, the nature of the Isser Malacha, be, but indeed it could very well be d'oraisa. Number of nafkaminas, whether you hold that it's d'oraisa d'rabbanan. Number one, will we apply the rule of shvus d'shvus b'malka mitzvah? Number two, the propriety of wearing tefillin. If you hold that there's an isur malacha d'oraisa, then you don't have to wear tefillin. If there's no isur, if mi d'oraisa, you can wear tefillin. I'm sorry, if mi d'oraisa, you do malacha, so you should wear your tefillin. So those two should go together. I might have switched that up. Thirdly, will we apply the din of safek d'rabbanan lahakel or not? To if it is a safek, if something's a malacha, for example, would we assume it's a safek d'oraisa or a safek d'rabbanan? Now, that's the first point. The second point is, what are the heterim that are allowed? What are the parameters of malacha on chol hamoed? So basically, there are four things. Malacha is aser, but there are four categories that are mutter. Number one, davar ha'aved. Number two, if it's a tzorech hamoed, which we'll talk about. Number three, if there's a poel she'en lo mayochal, which we won't really speak about, it's less nogel ma'isa. And number four, tzorchei rabim, which we'll mention briefly. So when we speak about davar ha'aved, davar ha'aved first of all has to be a loss in keren, not a menias reba. When we speak about poel she'en lo mayochal, we're not going to discuss that. Tzorech hamoed, I want to talk about. Tzorech hamoed, there are two kinds of tzorechs. There's a tzorech that's a ma'isa hedyot and a ma'isa uman. If a tzorech for hamoed permits a ma'isa hedyot, so therefore, if you want to change a tire, for example, that's presumably ma'isa hedyot, and it's a tzorech hamoed, you're going somewhere, so you could change your flat. However, ma'isa uman is not permitted. So if you need to change your transmission on Yantif, that would not, after you want to go to Hershey Park, changing your transmission in order to go to Hershey Park is not permitted, because that's a ma'isa uman. Ma'isa uman is not permitted l'tzorech ha-moed. The exception for tzorech ha-moed that we do allow is in the case of ochel nefesh dika things. For example, anything that relates to food. If you're lucky enough that your wife is a pastry chef, a professional pastry chef. So then she can do her professional pastry chefing kind of things, because that's tzorech hamoed, even though it's ma'ase uman, but it's an extension of ochel nefesh. And the Mishnah in Moed Katan extends that not only to things of food per se, but anything related to guf. For example, the Mishnah in Moed Katan says that a woman is allowed to, she could have her makeup done in a professional makeup, go to a cosmetician who's professional. Why? Because that's related to the body, and therefore anything that relates to the body is a tzorech hamoed that reaches the dimension of tzorechei haguf, which is an extension of tzorech ochel nefesh, and therefore can be done even at tzorech, even a ma'ase uman. Another example would be, let's say, a broken toilet. A broken toilet in a house that has 7 bathrooms is not allowed to be fixed on Yom Tov, unless you have 45 people there. But in a normal house, if you have, let's say, 2 bathrooms for a family of 5, and one of them is broken, that's going to be tough. If you're in an apartment and you have 1 bathroom, that's going to be really tough. So in that case, are you allowed to call a plumber? For calling a plumber is a ma'ase uman. And therefore, tzorech hamoed should be aser. However, since the bodily needs are considered an extension, tzorech haguf is an extension of ochel nefesh, therefore you'll be permitted to do even a ma'ase uman. However, if you have many bathrooms, so it's just you don't need this bathroom for your bodily whatever, because you have other bathrooms that are options, therefore will not be permitted to call a plumber in that situation. Similarly, if your glasses break and you have to take it to the optician, it's a ma'ase uman, you can't do it, except for the fact, even with tzorech hamoed, except for the fact that since your glasses, your ability to see, is tzorechei haguf, which is an extension of ochel nefesh, that would be permitted. Now, let's talk about tzorechei rabim for a second. Tzorechei rabim is mutter, but only, there are limits to tzorechei rabim. Sorry, I was lost in my... Let's continue talking about tzorechei moed for a minute, and talk about things that are extensions of tzorechei haguf. Let's talk about a Polaroid camera. A Polaroid camera, if everyone remembers what a Polaroid camera, it gives you the results right away, or sending something to print. On one hand, that mice is a mice of a hediot, you just press a button. On the other hand, the result is a professionally looking result. So is that going to be a ma'ase uman or a ma'ase hediot? And if it's a ma'ase uman, because the result is professionally looking, then it should be prohibited. So therefore, actually, when I print my shiurim for the last days of Yom Tov, I try to press the print button. When I say go to print and I press like print, I try to do that with a shina. I try to do that with my knuckle. Maybe it would be tzar davar ha'aveid, because my Yom Tov would be ruined if I had to memorize all my shiurim before I print them out. So maybe it would be davar ha'aveid. And davar ha'aveid, you are permitted to have a ma'isa uman. So remember, for tzorech moed, only ma'isa hedut, not ma'isa uman, unless it's for tzorech ha'agur. Mash'ein king, when it comes to davar ha'aveid, for davar ha'aveid, there's a leak. Oh, there's a leak. Then you could call the plumber. Because that's a davar ha'aveid. The leak could get worse. The leak could cause damage. When we talk about tzorechei rabim, the parameters of tzorechei rabim does not mean that anything the rabbi needs. So for example, tzorechei rabim is not allowed, you're not allowed to build a shul or a yeshiva on, you're not allowed to do construction for the shul or yeshiva on Yom Tov or on Chol Moed. All you are allowed to do is things that relate again to the guf. So for example, if there's a problem with the mikveh, then you could do tzorechei rabim and do construction on the mikveh. If there's a pothole in the shul parking lot and people are going to trip on it, then you could do the construction on Chol Moed, because it's tzorechei rabim that is for something related to the guf, to a person's body. You could fix the shul bathroom. Funny, you could fix the shul. This is a great question. Are you allowed to fix the base medrash, and are you allowed to fix the shul bathrooms? And interestingly enough, on Chalma, you are, yes, allowed to fix the shul bathrooms, but you're not allowed to fix the base medrash, because bathrooms relate to tzorchei haguf, and shul bathrooms relate not to tzorchei haguf.
But the air conditioning, let's say...
Air conditioning might be considered tzorechei haguf, one could argue, and then maybe it would be mutter for tzorechei, for the heter of tzorechei rabim.
You can fix the bathrooms in the shul and not the base
medrash? You could fix the shul bathrooms, but you cannot improve the base medrash.
Okay.
Correct. Let's talk about why Chazal permitted tzorechei rabim. It's a fascinating rabim. The rabim says that the reason why that tzorechei rabim is permitted is because Chachamim realized that if everybody has to do something, then nothing will ever get done. So they picked the days that everybody's off as a day that people will be able to, since you're not going to work, that's a day that you're not going to work anyway for you, doing things for yourself. That's a day that, you know, people will be willing to volunteer their time and to do work for the tzibur because they're not going to work themselves. So that's what the Ravid's svara, why it would be mutter to ask to tzorchei rabim on Chol HaMoed. In terms of tzorchei moed, we have the question of dentists, doctors, appointments of that sort. So if there's tzar, it's definitely a tzorch HaMoed, that's a tzorch HaGuf, everything's mutter. If there's no tzar, you just want to have a dentist appointment, then a lot of people I know do this. They say, oh, I'm off for a few days, let me schedule my dental appointment, my doctor's appointments, my checkups. So that is subject to machlokas, haposkim, remotion, Ramiat Yaakov said it's aser, because it's zilz yantif to schedule your appointments, even if there's no malach involved, but other poskim, Rav Yashiv, Rav Scheinberg says you're allowed to do anything related to medicine for yantif, for Chol HaMoed, certainly you should be able to go to the doctor. Okay, let's now talk about the next heter, which is Davar HaAved. Davar HaAved is permitted, as I mentioned, to even a Maisu Uman, but it's limited that it shouldn't be something that's excessive tircha, and also, even if there's a Davar HaAved, you're not allowed to schedule it for Yom Tov. Like, let's say there's something that is a slow leak. So you can't say, you know, I have a slow leak a week and a half before Pesach, I'm busy now, let's take care of this slow leak. You can't leave a slow leak there forever, it will definitely cause more damage. But to schedule for Yom Tov, that's called Mochavi Malach to Lamoed, that's usher even for a Davar HaAved. Now, another point, separate from the four heterim that we mentioned about Chol HaMoed, is what is the Isser? Is the Isser Malacha, or is the Isser Tircha? So, for example, could you carry a couch up and down the stairs on Chol HaMoed? Could you move in your apartment building from 6A to 6B? So, there's no Malacha involved. You're carrying it inside a building, but there's a Tircha. Or, alternatively, are you allowed to flick the bathroom lights on and off on Chol HaMoed? If you don't need them. I mean, turn the lights off. So there's a malacha, but there's no tircha. So this is a discussion among the poskim, and what is the maskana? That's a good shayla. The point is, you shouldn't be involved in something that's too much of a tircha on a Chol HaMoed, even if it's not going to actually be a violation of the malacha. Should you do malacha, if there's no benefit, you're probably, you know, carrying a tissue in your pocket on a Chol HaMoed, right? That's a malacha, where there's no erev, right? But there's no tircha, so if you could avoid it, it's probably a little bit better, but that's my focus on Pesach. You're right. Thank you. So that wasn't a good example, maybe. No, that's only the tzorech. Tissue that you don't need anymore, there's not the tzorech, so that might not have the heter of carrying the tzorech for carrying. Okay, those are the main points of... Of the Shiur and Chol HaMoed. Let's now talk about the next Shiur, which is the laws of Tumas Kohanim. So when it comes to Tumas Kohanim, this is Rabbi Konigsberg's Shiur. The Shaila is, does Tumas Meis apply to a guy? The answer is absolutely yes, 100% without any Shaila. But that's only without any Shaila regarding Maga and Masa. When it comes to Tumas Ohel, that's Adam Kiyomis Ba'ol, Atem Krim Adam, Ve'enelis Olam Krim Adam. That's machlokas tanam and machlokas in the Shulchan Aruch. Halacha lemais, the Shulchan Aruch is machmir, that there is tumas ohel for a mace. And the Ramah is mekel meikar hadin, that mace akum does not give off tumas ohel. However, even the Ramah who's mekel medina says you should be machmir. So now let's talk about some scenarios where we could apply this leniency that Ashkenazim have of Ein Tumas Meis Akum Ba'ohel. So there's a Dagmar Ravava that talks about that from which you could possibly build an argument to allow a Kohen to go to medical school. Again, if he doesn't touch the dead body, but maybe he could be in the room. Why? Because there's a Ravid. The Ravid says that the halacha is that if there's Tumah B'chibur, if you're holding a mace in your right hand, you could touch another mace with your left hand. Tumah b'chibur. Once you're already tameh, you can continue to be metameh yourself. A kohen, of course. This whole shiur is about kohanim, obviously. The question is, once you don't, let's say you touch the mace in the morning, could you touch a different mace that afternoon? That's machlokas Rambam and Ravid. So the Rambam says that's also, once you're porish, you no longer have the heter of tumba chiburin. But the Rabbi says it's mutter because even though you're not touching the mace anymore, but you're not being mosif tuma al tuma, so you're not going to have to wait an extra day, for example, to become tahar. So the Rabbi says that it's mutter. That's A. B, if we assume that the A, you have a Rabbi who says that once you're tummy already, there's no problem becoming tummy again that same day. B, if we assume that a mace is not mitami but ohel, let's make, says the Dagum of Hava, a sex feka. If I'm tummy already, I a kohen, I'm tummy already, I could go into an ohel of an akum. Why? Because safek, maybe kohan, maybe akum are not mitami at all but ohel. And even if they are mitami but ohel, maybe we hold like the Ravid, who permits you, since I'm tummy already, to continue to become tummy again. And we're all tummy nowadays. So if we mitzareth that sex sake of the Ravid with the Ramah, it could come out that you'd be allowed to have a Kohen be in a room where they have dead bodies of a Gentile. That suggestion to allow Kohanim to take gross anatomy has not really been accepted for a number of reasons. Number one, because the Ravid is da siyachid, to say that we'll continue to say that there's a heter of Tomas... that's still considered tumah b'chibur, and even after you're no longer touching it. Number two, the Ravid himself might only have said that there's no malchus to become tummy again after you touch the mace this morning, but not that it's mutar l'chatchila. And therefore, the Ramosha Feinstein says that indeed a kohen would not be permitted to go to a gross anatomy lab to be in the same room, even if he's not touching. And more than that, Ramosha, let's talk about Ramosha's tshuva about going to medical, kohanim to medical school. He says that even though we're all mechuyav to save lives, but we're not obligated to go to school to learn how to save lives. There's no din of pikuach nefesh. And secondly, there are plenty of doctors who are not Jewish at all. And third of all, you have plenty of Jewish doctors who are not kohanim. Therefore, Moshe does not offer a kula for a kohen Jew to go to medical school. What about bikacholim in a hospital? What about somehow a kohen went to medical school? I don't know why or how, but he did. Now he's in the hospital, is that okay? So let's talk about being in a hospital. That's the next point. So the halacha is that tumas meis travels through open space. So if you have an open door, and under the same roof, if this door would be open, there would meis be in this room, chas shalom, then the tumah from this room would travel anywhere on this floor, only on this floor because it's covered by the same ohel. So the tumah would go to every other room that's open to this hallway, to this door, and consecutive door, open doorways. It won't go upstairs, it won't go downstairs, because this roof stops from going upwards, and the floor below it stops from going downwards, but anywhere on this floor. So, if you are in a hospital, and on that floor there's a mace, that would be a problem if the doors are open. If a Kohen has to go into a hospital for whatever reason, he should make sure that there's a guy who he sends in front of him to close the door where the mace might be on the floor, and then he could walk safely through the hallways if that would be necessary. But there's a different issue called Sof Tuma Latzeis. There's a question whether Sof Tuma Latzeis is an Issa Daraisa or only Darabana, but Sof Tuma Latzeis, let's assume it's Darabana for now, says that even if there's no mace here right now at all, for example, the exit to, or the front entrance, or the back entrance of a hospital building, there's no mace on the bottom floor where people will come in or out. However, when they have a mace that they're going to have to take out, there's a mace somewhere in the building, and when they take him out of the morgue or out of the whatever ICU where he passed away, they're going to take him out through this door, then already right now we consider the mace to be in this doorway right now, and a kohen is not allowed to walk through that doorway, even though he's not really in the proximity of a mace. That's called Sof Tuma Latzeis. So the question is, Rav Shechter wants to suggest that maybe we could have a kula and say that Sof Tuma Latzeis will be svara to prohibit Kohanim only if they're Kohanei Yisrael. What's the svara of Sof Tuma Latzeis, suggests Rav Shechter and others? Maybe Yeshuas Yaakov says the following. He says, maybe why is there an issue of Sof Tuma Latzeis? Sof Tuma Latzeis is only because since there's a chiv to bury the mace, you're going to have to take him out. A Gentile who dies in a room could stay in that room. There's no chiyuv to bury him, to take him outside the room. But by Yisrael, where there's a chiyuv to take the mace out, that already tells us that the Chazal made it as though the mace is already in the door that you're going to take him out with. So therefore, let's say you're in a hospital which is Rov Akum, let's say there is a mace there, perhaps we could argue that there won't be a din of Sof Tuma Latzeis for the exit doors of that hospital because of this svar we just said, that there's no chiyuv kvura. Furthermore, if Rav Shechter has a kula regarding the issue of a kohen going through the doors of a hospital, if we assume that Tumas Ohel of an Akum is itself only a Chumra, as we mentioned, with the Ramah is Mekel Mekel Din, and the Din of Sof Tumalatzis is also a Din Rabbanon, maybe it would be like a Trade Rabbanon that would be Mutter, and maybe Rishechta suggests we won't apply the Din of Sof Tumalatzis by a Mace Akum. That's a Chukula that most people do not accept. A different issue of being in a hospital is size. Yeah.
I think most Akum accept the
That could be. The next point is, what about visiting Cholim? Let's say again, he's not going to be a doctor, but he wants to go to a hospital, and there won't be any, they'll make sure they close the doors. Well, you also have to worry about, you know, bones, skeletons in the closet, literally. So Rav Moshe Halach L'maisa says that really a kohen shouldn't visit a hospital, but b'makom hatzorech, Letzorach Gadol, for example, for Shalom Bayis, and or the Tzar of family members, if they can't have their Kohen relative or spouse visit them or child visit them, Letzorach Gadol Shalom Bayis, then it would be permitted if we assume that to rely on the Ramah who holds that Tumas Ohel would be Midrab, would not be Asr Mekar Hadin. That would be a kula that Rav Moshe gives, B'makom Tzorach Gadol. So if you're a Kohen and you have to visit your wife after she gave birth, and she wants you there, then you'd be permitted at Tzorach Gadol, assuming that anyone who's dead would be not Jewish. Let's talk about the next point, and that is, what's the stat? We know that a Kohen has to not only not become Tame, but has to make sure his child also doesn't become Tame. So what's the status of a pregnant Eishes Kohen? So pregnant Eishes Kohen, she has a baby inside of her, maybe a boy who's Mitzuvah, maybe a girl who's not Mitzuvah. Is she allowed to go to a Levaya? Could she go to a hospital? So the Rokeach says that it should be mutter for her to go to Levaya or Beis Almin because of a sex seva. First of all, if it's a boy, then it's aser, but if it's a girl, it's mutter. So Safik, maybe it's an akeva. And even if it's a zachar, Safik, it will be a nefel, Safik, it will be a ben kayama. That's what the sex fake of the Rokeach to permit a pregnant Eishes Kohen to go to a cemetery. Magen Avraham asks, why do you have to come on to the sex veka to be matahir? Why don't you suffice it to allow her to go with her baby into this Beis Almin? Why don't you suffice it to be tuma blua, tara blua? The baby's ensconced, is enveloped in the mother's tummy, and therefore shouldn't be able to contract tuma. So Reb Chaim Ozer has an answer that we're going to use in another one or two places. That's a chiddush in Hilchos Tumas Kohanim. And he says that Tumas Kohanim is not something that works with the regular halachas of tuma per se. Rather, the issur of a kohen is not to become tamei, but rather to be in proximity of tuma of a meis. So therefore, it's an issur of kiruv lemeis. So even if technically there would be a sex, even if technically there's tara blua, the baby is balua, and therefore won't become tamei because it's ensconced in its mother's tummy, but nevertheless, still being in the proximity of a in the ohel with a mace would be krivel, a mace would be aser. That's why the Rokeach had to bring a sex veka to permit it nevertheless, that maybe it's in a keva, maybe it's an ena ben kayama. But in terms of halach lamaisa, you have this sex veka. If a woman would be in the ninth month where there's no longer a suffix nefel, maybe we won't have this sex veka and it would be prohibited for her to go to a levaya. Similarly, if she got a ultrasound, and she knows that it's a boy, so Vaita, you don't have a sex fake of then maybe she's in a keva. So therefore, you have to see if the sex fake of the Rokeach will apply in your specific shayla that comes your way. Let's talk about another point that will also be another application of Rav Chaim Ozer's chiddush, that Tumas Kohanim is not a halach of Tumah, but rather of Kriv L'meis. And that is, there's a halacha called Cherev Harehu Kecholol, that any metal that ever touched a dead body becomes like an aviyavos hatuma. So if that's the case, if you have a piece of metal in the house, the doctor goes to work, and he has a scalpel, and once he touches the dead person, he brings the scalpel home, and he has Mr. and Mrs. Cohen come for Shabbos meal. And in that same house, under the same first floor, the office, the doctor has his office library on the side of the house, and the couple, Mr. and Mrs. Cohen, is sitting in the dining room at a Shabbos meal. What do you mean? The Kohen is in the same room as that scalpel, and that scalpel, we say, has this din called Cherev Harehu Kechol, has the status of Yavas HaTumah. How could you allow the Kohen to be in the same building? So we could answer with the Achiezer that even though in Hilchus Tumah, yes, Cherev Harel Kecholam, there is Tumah here on this first floor of this host, doctor's family's who's the host, but nevertheless, the Issur of Tumas Konim is not Tumah versus not Tumah, is not a question of Tumah, but rather is a question of Kriva L'meis, and there's certainly no Kriva L'meis if Mr. Cohn is visiting a house where there was a scalpel that touched a mace in an operating room 25 miles away. That would not be considered Kriva L'meis. Okay, let's go to the next point, which is what about driving through a cemetery or driving over a cemetery? So here the question is being ensconced in a car considered a chatzitza? Normally, if you'd be in a box that would surround the Kohen, he could be in a cemetery. However, there are a few reasons why we would say the car will not be chotzitz. Number one, because maybe it has a status of ohel zarek lo shmei ohel. Number two, even if we say ohel zarek is an ohel and could be a chotzitz b'fnei hatumah, nevertheless, the car is made out of metal. And halacha is that anything that itself is metal and therefore mekabel tumah can't be chotzitz mipnei hatumah. So therefore, cars would probably not be a good way to surround a person, to ensconce a person, prevent them from becoming tumah. Along similar, let's now talk about an airplane. When we talk about an airplane where the plane could be flying directly over a kever, so we'd be worried that it's being mahil over a kever, or so the Kohen on board flying over a kever, could he say that he's that the bottom of the plane is chotzeis mipnei hatumah? So here we have the same two issues. Number one, maybe the plane is an ohel zarek in lashmei ohel, and therefore the Kohen will contract the tumah. Number two, maybe the plane is made out of a metal that's mekabel tumah, big machlokas, whether only the six metals of mentioned in the Torah mekabel tumah or all metals, even those that are not specified in the Torah, machlokas gra against Tiferes Yisrael. If we assume, like the Tiferes Yisrael, that all metals are considered metal, and therefore they will be mekabel tumah, according to the Tiferes Yisrael, the bottom of the plane will not be able to be a chatzitza, and it will be taka mekabel tumah, and therefore a kohen can't fly over a grave, except for the Achiezer, the third application now of the Achiezer, and that is, even though in Hilchas Tumah, the plane is flying over a dead body, the person, the kohen sitting on the plane is tameh, however, the person is thousands of feet above the mace, and therefore there's no kriva el ha-mace, and therefore for Tumas Kohanim, we don't actually follow the halachas of Tumah per se, but rather the issur is kriva el ha-mace, and that's not the case, so we mutter. Let's now talk about the last point, not if a Kohen is flying over a cemetery, but what about a Kohen in a plane with a body in the cargo hold? So here, could we say that the cargo hold, the roof over the cargo hold below the passenger's floor is going to be chotzeitz? So maybe that will be ohel zarek, again, same shaila as we mentioned already this is the third time, maybe ohel zarek and a chotzeitz. On the other hand, relative to the plate, the person on top, he's flying at the same velocity as the mace below. So maybe it's not considered an ohel zarek. Some people say that the box should be chotzeitz, the box where the mace is held should be chotzeitz, but on the other hand, what's holding up the box? It's holding the box at the bottom of the plane. And the bottom of the plane is Dabra HaMekabel Tumah, so maybe the back should also be Mekabel Tumah, so therefore it's better not to fly in a plane with a dead body inside of it. Okay, let's now go to the next year. Would you like the Lux of Kiruv, or like women's issues and feminism?
Kiruv.
You don't like women's issues, okay. What is that?
Women's issues,
fine. Okay, so let's start talking about Talmud Torah. So, of course, even though it's machlokas, you should know that we do pass in Kol Malamed. When my seventh grader found out about this Gemara, he was so excited. My son. Kol Malamed is Bito Torah Kilo Lamda Tiflus. He's very excited to hear that. However, as the theme of the Rabbi Reis's shir was that there are certainly, Pshitos, the Prisha says that if a woman herself is interested, and she's not from the Rove, she herself is interested personally to learn, so she would be permitted to. Secondly, the Chavetz Chaim, of course, points out that and all the halachas that apply to women do have to learn. What's an example of halachas that apply to them? Orachayim, Eben Ezer, Yoredeya, and Chol Shemishpat. Great. Third layer of Soloveitchik's Svara, that to be able to have a Chashivas HaTorah, if a woman is going for a PhD in aeronautical engineering, and all she knows about in her learning is, a few Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos, she's going to see sophistication in other realms of Torah, of worldly knowledge, and a lack of sophistication in Torah, and that would be a terrible thing for a B'nai Sosel. So certainly in communities where women are highly educated, it would be absolutely necessary for a woman to be equally highly educated in the realm of Torah. And Ramosha also talks about the... When it comes to women, let's now talk about the next point, which is the role of women's leadership positions, or women's role in leadership positions. There are a number of areas that have to be addressed. We'll talk about two of them. First of all, the issue of srara, which we'll speak about. Tznius, which is not just a value, but it's actually a halacha. There are certain halachas that apply because women don't go to battle because of tznius, so it does cross the threshold of halacha, not just, hashkafa. Mesorah, of following what the mesorah is and what the advice of the gedolim are. And of course, halacha, you'll see there are certain limitations that halacha provides, as we'll see. Now, based on that, we'll talk about some of the details of those things. So let's talk first about srara. The pasuk says in Dvarim, Som tasim alacha melech, and the Sifri says, Melech velo malka. So that means that you can't have a queen, or the queen doesn't have any status in Jewish, in halacha. However, the Rambam's girsa adds a few words and says, V'chein kol mesima shebi Yisrael. So the Rambam adds to the Sifri everyone agrees to, because it's a Sifri, but the Rambam adds that any position of leadership, any appointments of leadership, any srara, a woman should not be able to have. So does that mean that a woman cannot be a dean, a principal, a president of a company, a CEO? So maybe. But Ramosha says that Meikar Hadin, Ramosha's question was a woman who was an almana, she lost her husband, and she wanted to take over her husband's hashgacha, and that was the way she would support her family. So the question is, to be the mashgiach, is that a situation of srara and she'll be aser? So Ramosha says that Meikar Hadin, we probably don't paskin like the Rambam, and we don't paskin that there's it's a srara for other areas other than being a queen. And Meikar Hadin, it's not aser. However, we are choshish for all the other sheaths to say there is. We're choshish for the Rambam who says that there is an is. We're choshish, not Medina, but we're choshish. And therefore, our Masorah is to be choshish for this Rambam, that it's aser for women to be in a... that we're choshish, that a woman shouldn't be in a position of Sura. So therefore, she should work under a Rav HaMachshir if the situation is indeed a dire situation. And being under a Rav HaMachshir will take away the Sura aspect a little bit, and that would be make it mutter.
Everybody under Machshir today?
What?
Isn't everybody, like, if you work for the Star K or the OU, you're under the OU. So a woman who wants to be Mashgiach for the OU, she's under the Rabbanim for the OU.
Yeah, but this is only with Tzorach Gadol, because a woman who was an almana had to put her kids to, she didn't have a way to even finance herself. So if a woman has nothing else to, no other business she could go into, that doesn't mean we should hire Mashgichot. It just means that if a woman is, finds herself with three kids, her husband died, and all she could do is be Mashgiach, then yes, there's room to be Mako. Because she's working under the OU, yes. Rav Soloveitchik introduced a different achid, it was mechadish, another iser, that is not necessarily agreed to by everybody. That besides the iser of Sra, there's a different problem called minui. Minui is anything that's an appointed position. So for example, shchita, the halacha is that, of course, the Mishnah says that a woman could be shochet, but yet we are no hignat. Why? So Rav Soloveitchik suggested that in Europe, the position of a shochet has become an appointed position. So inasmuch as there's an appointed position, so even though it might not be srara, or maybe that by definition, anything that you appoint a woman to, or somebody to, that is a srara, so maybe that would be another problem, even if it's not a srara per se, but any position that you appoint a woman to might be a problem of minui, besides the actual srara. So I'll tell you nafkamina between srara and minui. A ger can also not have a position of srara. However, there's no iser for a ger to have a position of minui. So let's say, for example, a president of a shul, let's say, is not really srara because... Or let's say a principal of a school is not really a position of Srara because they have a board and they have the parents who tell them what to do, and the principals don't really make any financial decisions, so maybe principals not considered Srara. But it could be that if they're appointed to that position, maybe it would be a problem of Minui, separate and apart from Srara. Okay, let's now talk about women rabbis. Is that a possibility? So if you know what a rabbi is, then we could define whether a woman could become a rabbi. A rabbi is not just, you know, like we had in the time of, that was broken in the time of Rav Papa from Moshe Rabbeinu putting the hand on the head. Rather, Rama says, rabbi is, we call a person a rabbi, and he has Rishus Lavdon Dine Kenostos. So if that's what a rabbi means, well, a woman who is, by definition, not able to be Lavdon Dine Kenostos, by definition, can't be a rabbi. It's not a matter of hashkafa, it's a clear halachic point that smicha is only if you could paskin Dine Kenostos, Dayanus, Mominus. And we know that women are, just like they're pasul from Eidus, they're equally pasul for Dayanus. So therefore, from a purely halachic stance, a woman cannot be a rabbi. And that's not even getting into any issues of Tznius, Mesora, listen to the Gdolim, nothing to do with that, it's just not a, just halachic, it doesn't start. In terms of women paskening, like a Yoetzet, for example, so of course we have this source that Devora taught. But the interesting thing is that Tosa says that Devora didn't paskin. Devora taught the men sheyadunu, meaning she was like the consultant, but the men were the one who issued the psak. So it could be that even if a woman could say what she thinks, it's sort of to allow the men to paskin in the context of her teaching a little bit. So perhaps if you have your etzet that's underneath the rav, that might have some room in halacha. When we talk about things like women getting aliyahs, so the problem is that it's, even if Medina, Katan Mikra, I did according to the Mishnah Megillah, Katan could get an aliyah, maybe a woman, theoretically one could argue, should be able to get an aliyah, but the Bach writes that, the Gemara says that, Kvod Hatsiba, that a woman shouldn't get an aliyah. So if a certain congregation says that for us, based on our open-mindedness, it is a covet for us for a woman to get an aliyah, so the Gemara doesn't apply to us, because Gemara says it's not covet hatzibur. For our tzibur, it is a covet. Sorry, because the Bach says that covet hatzibur is not something that is subjective to what this tzibur feels or what that tzibur feels. It's a cross-the-board covet hatzibur that is an objective point that women are not covet hatzibur to get an aliyah. Let's not talk about women saying Kaddish. This is probably the most applicable shiloh that you're going to get from this shir. You know, I have a woman, especially if she's an only daughter, it's even highlighted. I know Levaya, a family that's not so from. So the woman wants to say Kaddish, so could a woman say Kaddish? So the Chavos Yoreh says, even though there might be a tikkun to the neshama, but there is we should be concerned that it will be machlish koach ha minhagim, and therefore you shouldn't. The Rav Henkin argued and said that efshush ein kbeda. So that was transmutated or mutilated, perhaps, to mean that, yes, women can. Right? If you say Efshush Ein Kpeda, that means, yes, it's allowed. Okay? But Rav Henkin says that Avaloba Beis Knesses, Avaloba Beis Levush Amerikai, meaning it has to be done in a very, very tzniastic way. And, of course, there's a lot of discussion that this will be, will fundamentally undermine whatever barriers, whatever tznius will try to gain, and also you have a problem with Tvarim Shebikdusha. The Shef is a very interesting shita, and he holds that it's a Tvarim Shebikdusha, and therefore it has to be where there's a minion in the as a Sinashim. You don't have a minion, so she has to say Kaddish in the men's section. So go try that. So yeah, of course you could say Kaddish. You have to find a shul where they'll let the woman into the men's section to say Kaddish, but other than that, he holds he shouldn't be saying it there, so it's sort of a catch-22. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik felt that if Medina, it is okay for a woman to say Kaddish, and you stop them from saying Kaddish, that just strengthens, you know, the arguments of the naysayers saying, oh, even the things that we're allowed to do, we're not allowed to do, so you have to evaluate and talk to your posek before you do anything of this type in your shul. In terms of bat mitzvah parties, so Moshe says we're already mitzvah on the baseball themed bar mitzvahs. So why should you start gala parties for a bat mitzvah? But the Sri Deish says no. If it's the point is to mechanech a girl and to inspire her, then you could make a bas mitzvah, just not in the shul, but in a social hall, it's okay. Rabbi Avadia says that the minhagim for the Sfaradim has been doing it for centuries and centuries, and the Ben Ish Chai made a bas mitzvah. I don't think he had a bas mitzvah because he was a man, but he made a bas mitzvah. Rabbi Willard likes to say his typical, you know, bas mitzvah speech or bar mitzvah shtickel Torah is that there's two dinim in a bar or a bas mitzvah. One is that the father has fulfilled the din of teaching his son Torah, and other is that the girl has, the individual, boy or girl, is reaching all mitzvahs. So when it comes to the first din that the father finished his teaching, his mitzvah chinuch, you don't have a mitzvah chinuch to teach your daughter Torah. So the father has no right to invite any guests because there's no party for the father. The girl is reaching the all mitzvah, so the girl could invite her friends for reaching the all mitzvah. That's how Rabbi Willick has this very creative chiluk. And he says the parents can't invite any friends to a bas mitzvah, but the girl could invite her friends to a bas mitzvah. That's an interesting chiluk that I don't know if anyone besides Rabbi Willick says, but that is creative. Okay, Yisod is, you should speak to Tamidei Chacham Mufakim who carry the weight of Klais on their shoulders before you make changes in the fabric of society. Let's now go. Do you want halachas of Kiruv or do you want brain death. Okay. Let's talk about brain death. Hold on a second. Okay, let's continue. Could I trouble you for that drink behind you? So the Shaila about brain death starts in with the Duke of Mecklenburg. That's where the post can talk about it. Thank you. The Duke of Mecklenburg ruled in Mecklenburg, I suppose, that... The Duke of Mecklenburg said that anybody who dies can't be buried for the first 3 days to make sure that he's indeed dead. Because it would be really bad if you'd bury somebody and he wakes up, you know, a day later. So that sort of made a rash among all the poskim and all the people who lived in those, from Yidden who lived in those areas, had to deal with this edict. And that's where the poskim talk about, you know, the need to, that we have a definition of death and however we define death, you could bury them, you don't have to be worried about all these crazy concerns. Death is death, the way the Chevra Kaddish have defined death since time immemorial. So let's go through two or three main primary sources about relate to brain death, and we'll try to figure out whether brain death or is death or not. I should say before this, just one more point about the Duke of Mecklenburg situation. There is a Maseches Smachos that says that there was a maisa that they came and they found somebody in the kuchim after a few days and they found that he was alive. So some brought that as a proof that we are concerned that somebody could be buried alive. Kuchim, again, they're not really buried underground. They're buried sort of in a little cave. But the poskim of Chasam Sofer says, no, that's a terrible shaila. And he didn't even mention the shoel who asked the shaila because it was such a terrible shaila. The shoel, of course, is not the Vendi, Maritz Chias. But the Chasam Sofer says it's absurd. You can't, death is death. We're not going to wait 3 days. Now, what we have to understand is why the shaila of brain death has so recently been come to the fore. And that is because it used to be that once there are two parts to your body. There's a brain, let me rephrase that. There are two parts to being alive, for simplicity purposes right now. There's breathing and heart beating. And they're not the same. It used to be that when you stopped breathing, your heart stopped pumping. Or if your heart stopped pumping, you would stop breathing. However, the chiddush happened when the ventilator, the respirator was created, and they found that even after a person stops breathing on their own, they're no longer breathing. So saying, oh, they're not breathing, they must be dead, right? But if we pump air into their lungs, mechanically, through a ventilator, through a respirator, as long as air is coming into the lungs, the heart will continue to beat, that muscle will continue to contract and pump blood throughout the body. So if you have a fellow who's brain dead, what it means that he's brain dead is that his brain is dead. There's nothing happening in his brain. And therefore, his breathing is not happening. The brain is not telling the body to breathe. But the problem is, and not the problem is, but if we force air into his lungs with a ventilator, the heart will continue to pump, even though there's no brain, even though there's no breathing on his own, but since the oxygen is coming into the lungs by this machine, the heart will continue to pump for another few weeks, few months possibly, and therefore you could have a living heart with everything else in the body being, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say everything else, but the brain being entirely dead. So at a certain point, when Harvard Medical School realized that you could have this sort of situation where the guy's brain is dead, but his heart is still pumping, you know, viciously, and keeping all the other limbs, which is great. If you want to harvest those limbs a week or 2 weeks later to give the heart to somebody and the lungs to somebody and things, you have fresh organs to harvest at your convenience, because the oxygenated blood is continuing to go to all the organs. So when you want to harvest them, they'll be perfectly fresh new organs, as opposed to if somebody would die and the heart would stop beating. So after a few minutes or a few hours that the organs aren't getting their oxygenated blood, they would start to decompose a little bit and they would die. So it's very much in the interest of those who want transplants to say the brain death, they're really dead. They're really dead, but the heart is still beating. And let's keep their heart beating so that I can get the organs that I need when I need them, and they'll be fresh and available for the recipient. However, if we would assume that brain death is still alive, so if you would harvest the organs from somebody who is alive, that's called in English, betzicha. So that's what we have to figure out. Is brain death... Gneva also. That's the least of it. Okay, so the main source is the Gemara in Yuma Pehe, which talks about being Pokech Esagal, if somebody is found to be buried under rubble, there's an earthquake, a building collapses, and you see feet sticking out, or you see a hat perched on top of somebody's head sticking out of the rubble. You want to know, Kribim Chal Shavas Doraisa, to get the rubble off this person. So the question is, you have to see if he's alive. So the Gemara says, Ad Heichon Hubodek, Machlokes, if you check, Ad Chotmo, Rad Libo. So the way I would translate that Machlokes is, do you want to check if there is chotmo to see if there's breathing in the nose, or adlibo to see if there's beating of the heart? And that would answer our question. Especially if I tell you that everyone holds that we paskin ad chotmo, that you check the nose, it sounds like we paskin that what defines life is breathing. So if what defines life is breathing, once his brain is dead, he stops breathing by himself. Like the machine could breathe, but he doesn't breathe anymore. In which case, brain death would be dead. However, if you look at Rashi, and nobody really argues on Rashi, and there are practically no other Rishonim on this, Rashi does not learn the Gemara as I just presented it to you. Rashi says that you should check his nose, because then you'll be able to determine if his heart is still beating. Meaning, if you check his nose and you see that he's breathing, then you know the heart must still be beating. That means what we really care about is not whether he's breathing or not. Breathing is just a simen that his heart is beating, and that's really what determines life. So if you learn the Gemara like Rashi, it seems that the machlokas here is everyone agrees that what determines life is the heart beating. The question is, how much do you have to check, or where should you check to check if the heart is beating? Is enough to check in the heart? Sometimes it's very faint, you can't feel anything beating there. So if you know the guy's breathing, then you know that his heart is beating, because the heart could beat even after... You can have heart beating without breath, but you can't have breath without heart beating. So, according to Rashi, and no one else really argues, it seems that the machlokas, everyone agrees that the heart is what determines life, and therefore that would mean, the corollary of that, that brain death is still alive since the heart is beating. And that's what Rashi, and that's the simple reading of that Gemara. If the heart is beating, and he's alive, and brain death is alive, obviously you can't take the organs. That's one source. The other primary source is the Mishnah Ahalos. Mishnah Ahalos talks about when somebody is considered a metamimes. And the Mishnah says that a goseis is not metame. However, if you have a person whose head is chopped off, even though he's mefarches, his neurons are going crazy, he's jumping up and down, he is considered dead. Let's think about what that means. You decapitate somebody, but the body is still moving. The Mishnah says that he's dead. So those people who assume that brain death is dead will say, what do you have here? You have a moving body, but since it's severed from the brain, meaning like a dead brain, the Mishnah tells us that it's dead. Sounds like brain death is death. However, Rav Schechter, Rav Laich, and others say you see exact opposite from this Mishnah. This Mishnah is telling you that normally, movement shows life. Any movement shows life. This Mishnah is telling you the single movement in the world where even though there's movement, it is not a demonstration of life. If you chop the head off, even though there's movement, the Mishnah has to tell you, there's no life here. Normally, any movement means that there is life. You see a heart beating, that means that there's life. The only time that stops, that life does not indicate, I'm sorry, that movement does not indicate life, is when you chop off the head. So then, since you chopped off the head, even though there's movement there, it's not considered life. And that's how they would respond in terms of this Mishnah to the argument of the others who hold that death is, that brain death is death.
But you cut off the head, then is the heart still, isn't it still beating for a little bit?
After you chop off the head?
Yeah.
Everything's moving. I'm saying the arms are waving. Certainly the heart is beating. Everything's moving.
So the heart and is still, beating at that point, then why would they be considered dead?
That's the Chiddush of the Mishnah. That's exactly the point. This is the one case where you could have a heartbeat that you're still dead because this, that's the Chiddush of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is telling you this is the one case where you do have, meaning every other case where there's a heart beating, that shows that there's life. The one exception where even though the body's moving, the heart and everything else is moving and everything else is functioning, the guy's waving and doing all kinds of things, which normally means life, here the Mishnah is mechadish that since the brain is chopped off, the head is chopped off, that means he's dead.
Well, that's because the brain is dead though, no?
So that's the first way to say it. The other way is saying that's exactly the Chiddush of the Mishnah. The Chiddush of the Mishnah is to tell you that all other movements is considered life, except in this case, because of the decapitation, because decapitation is considered.
Isn't mechadish decapitation and brain death?
That is correct. That's correct. Okay. Rav Schechter has a little bit of a different twist on this Shaila, and he understands that the Chazal tells that there are Shlosha Evarim Shanashama Tuluya Bahem, the heart, the brain, and the liver. And if there are three Evarim, so you're only dead, if one of them is still alive, then we're Mesipik if you're dead until we know for sure that all three Evarim are no longer operation. And if as long as any of those are still, we don't know how to understand Shlosha Dvarim Shanashama Tuluya Bahem. Does that mean that you need all three or any one of those three? And therefore, Rav Schechter holds that misafik, you have to assume a brain dead person might still be alive because his heart is still operating, it's still operational, and therefore brain death would not be considered death. Okay, that's the end of the Shiur on brain death. Should we now do...
Just really quick, so during COVID when people were being put on respirators and they weren't able to breathe on their own, are they considered dead because they were on the respirator?
That's right. So part of the definition of brain death is that it's irreversible. So that's what they would argue. Okay. So do you want to do Kiruv or family planning?
Family planning.
Okay. So let's ask a Chakira in the gather of Puravu. On one hand, will we say that what is the mitzvah Puravu? Is the mitzvah Puravu to do a Maisa Bia, or is the mitzvah Puravu to have the resulting children? Is it the result, or is it the Tatzah, or is it the Maisa? So this, I'll boil it down for you very simply, is Machlokas, the Mechus Chinuch, and Rabbi Willig. Rabbi Willig says it's not him, it's actually a Tosis, but I'll present it like that. So the Mechus Chinuch says that the Maisa Bia is, that the Tatzah, the mitzvah is the Tatzah, it's having babies. That's the mitzvah. Everything else, the Bia is just a Hechsher to get to that. So we'll show you a number of nafkaminas between these two approaches, whether the mitzvah Puravu is the Maisa Bia or the Totsah having the baby. So for example, Tosus and Bava Basa talks about, the Gemara says that a Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin, Lisa Shifcha in a Yachal, and why don't we apply, what do you mean, let us say Bidachalota say. And Tosus says, because the assay is the Gemara Bia, and the Lota assay is the Ha'ara. The Isra of Shecha Ha'arufa is the Ha'ara, the beginning of the Bia, and the Mitzvah assay of Puravu is the Gemara Bia. Time out. What did Tosus just say? Tosus just said that the Mitzvah assay is the Gemara Bia. That means that the mitzvah to say according to Tosfos is the Maaseh Bia. The Minchas Chinah says, was bothered by Tosfos, like Tosfos, Mr. Tosfos, Rabbi Tosfos, why are you saying the Gemara Bia is the mitzvah? The mitzvah is not till the birth. So the Minchas Chinah is saying it's not till birth. But you see, Tosfos says, and Rabbi Willard points out, Tosfos says that the mitzvah is the Gemara Bia, the Gemara Maaseh Bia is the mitzvah peruvah. With that, we could also understand, we could appreciate three or four points, as I'll show you 1, 2, 3, 4. You'll see how the machlokas manifests itself in 3 points. The halacha is that you could fulfill, let's say a guy is not Jewish, and he has children, and they're his children, and then he's Megayer. When he's Megayer, the halacha is he does not have to have any more children. It sounds like he fulfilled the mitzvah of Puravu. Can I ask you a question? Did he have any bias after he became Jewish? He didn't have any bias, but he does have children who are alive. So it sounds like the Mechas Chinuch, that if you have children and you're Jewish, so even though the bias happened before he became Jewish, but now he's Jewish and he has children from before his conversion, so he has the mitzvah. Rabbi Willard is saying, no. Really, the bias is the mitzvah. And in Echanami, he did not ever fulfill the mitzvah of Puravu. What does it mean that you did fulfill the mitzvah of Puravu? It means that you, since you have kids from before you were a Jew, you don't have a chiyuv, you don't get any brownie points, you don't get any schar for having done a mitzvah saseh puravu, you just don't need to do this puravu anymore, you're exempt. You know the difference in college between getting credits and getting an exemption? So Rabbi Willig wants to say that if you had children while you were a guy, now that you're megayer, you get an exemption from needing to have more children. But not that you actually fulfilled the mitzvah of puravu. That's one example of where there would be a machlokas. Another example is the following. The halacha is, if you have a mamzer, you fulfill puruvu. Wait a second. Having a mamzer means that you lived with an eishes ish, for example. An eishes ish is a mitzvah habah b'avera. So you did a maisa bias iser, and that maisa bias iser fulfills a mitzvah. How could you fulfill the mitzvah puruvu with, and we know you can, that a mamzer does fulfill the mitzvah puruvu. So according to the Rabbi Willi, it makes a lot of sense. The mitzvah, I'm sorry, let me just say it the other way. The Mechas Chinuch makes a lot of sense, because the Mechas Chinuch says that the bia is not the mitzvah, the bia is only the hechsher mitzvah. And we don't say mitzvah ba'avera on a hechsher mitzvah. Rabbi Willig will have to say that really the mitzvah is the bia, but since what it means when you say that a mamzer fulfills puravu, it doesn't mean that you fulfill the mitzvah of puravu, it means that since you had kids, even though they happened through an iser, but that since you have kids, you no longer have a chiyuv to do puravu anymore. A third example where you'll have this locus manifest is in the case of notzra v'ambrati. If Zera is swimming around in a pool and she goes into the pool, the halacha is aviv hu l'chol davar. The person who deposited his Zera in that pool, in that bathhouse, is aviv hu l'chol davar, which is mashal, he fulfilled the mitzvah of puravu. So Mechas Chinuch will say, clearly there's no ma'asabiyah here, so clearly the fact that he ends up having children, that's why he fulfills the mitzvah. And the Rabbi Willig will say, no, really the mitzvah is the bia. But since he has, and he doesn't fulfill the mitzvah, because it was a ma'aseh bia. What it means that he fulfilled the mitzvah puravu, it doesn't mean he actually fulfilled it, like he gets brownie points, it just means that now he's exempt from having any more kids, because there are kids who he is the father of. Okay, that's the first point about the geder puravu. Next point. The halacha is that puravu is fulfilled only if zaro miyuchas achara. So I'm going to show you a number of scenarios where somebody can have a child, and even though he has children, the zaro will not be miyuchas achara, and he will therefore not be in fulfillment of the mitzvah puravu. For example, let's say you have a guy who lives with a Jewish woman and has kids. So are those kids related to him? They're not related to him. He's a guy, and he lives with this Jewish woman. They're her kids, not his kids. They're not related to him. Even after he's megayer, those kids are not related to him, and therefore he was not in fulfillment of Puravu because they're not Miyuchas Acharav. Next case, let's say you have a Jew, the opposite. Let's say you have a Jew who has children from a Gentile woman. So those kids are not Jewish. They have a Goyish mother. So since they're Goyish, since they're Gentile children, they're not Miyuchas Acharecha. The man's Jewish, and his Goyish girlfriend, who mothered the children, there's no connection between him and those children, and therefore even though he's Jewish, when he did the Ma'aseh Bia, and he has children while he's Jewish, he did not fulfill Peruvu, because the children are not Miyuchas Acharav. Most importantly, now coming to the main point, if you have an IVF situation, a non-Jewish egg donor, that means a husband has a wife, he's Jewish, she's Jewish. The woman, the husband's zera is fine, but the wife's eggs are low quality, or the wife doesn't have eggs. So they ask a non-Jewish woman to donate the eggs. If we assume his zera is going to go to those eggs and implant in his wife, if we assume, as Rabbi Willig assumes, that the child will not be Jewish because you're going to follow the egg donor, so that means that the father who provided the zera and put the zera, the fertilized zera, into his wife, will not be in fulfillment of Puravu if they're using egg donors. But if that's the case, then it should be prohibited for a husband to provide zera for his wife to do IVF. It should be zera levatala, because he's not fulfilling Puravu, as we just said, because it's not miyuchas achrav. So Rav Willig answered that it would be permitted for the husband to provide the zera, because even though there's no kiyum of Puravu, there would still be a kiyum of Sheves, which we'll talk about in a minute or two. Sheves, which is the secondary type of mitzvah. That's not exactly Puravu, but it's still somewhat of a mitzvah that would permit Shvichas Levatala. I mean, it's not Levatala, it's for having this child. Yeah.
So with Zara Miyuchas Acharav, in the case that we had mentioned before about a goy who converts, he already had kids, so he's a... Now that he converted to Jew, those kids, are they
not his kids whatsoever.
So he's only putter from the mitzvah of Peruvu, that he doesn't have to, but...
Doesn't even say that he's... Rabbi Willig might say that he's putter from... I don't even know if he's putter.
Because before we were saying that
right.
He's
putter. I don't even know if he's putter.
But over here now, all of a sudden, we're like, he never fulfilled it.
Right. So I don't know what Rabbi Willig would say. I don't know if Rabbi Willig would say that he's putter because he had kids from previously. It could be those kids are not. No, maybe those kids are not Miyuchas Achrav, and therefore he's not even putter. Because in order to be putter, you have to have kids from Miyuchas Achrav. So even though you didn't have Bia, you still have kids who are Miyuchas Achrav. Here he doesn't have kids who are Miyuchas Achrav. I think that's nothing. He didn't fulfill anything. But he has to now have children after he's Megayer. Okay, let's go to the next.
Why do you need the Sfar of Shavis? Can you just say, oh no?
Ono would not allow him to provide zera for IVF, because IVF is not through Ma'aseh Bia.
Oh.
IVF is, they take his zera in a lab, take this donor egg from this other lady, they put it together in a petri dish in a lab, and then afterwards they implant it into the woman's uterus.
Oh.
So there's no Ma'aseh Bia by IVF. Okay. Now let's talk about divorce after 10 childless years. Theoretically, the Mishnah says that after 10 years with no children, there's the next point. After 10 childless years, man has a mitzvah peruvu, he didn't fulfill a mitzvah peruvu, so he has to divorce his wife, right? So how come we don't make women divorce the wives nowadays? So Rabbi Willig has a shtickle Torah that since Bisman Hazeh, you can't take a second wife. Really, a time with a Chazal, you're able to take a second wife with whom to be Mekayim peruvu. Rabbi Willig has a shtickle Torah, which we're not going to go into, that since now that you can't take a second wife, you're not going to have to divorce your first wife. That's a side point.
What do you know with your accent?
It's based on the Meshech Chachma, but we're not going to go into that.
Is it written anywhere?
Yeah, a lot of this whole shiur from Rabbi Willig is from Beis Yitzchak, volume 44, page 23. A lot of this shiur is from that article that he wrote in Beis Yitzchak. Maybe not everything, but a lot of it. Let's now talk about the relationship between the mitzvah of Peruvu on one hand and Sheves or La'erev al Tanach Yadech, which are two psukim in the Nevi'im and Ksuvim that say that a person should have children even later in life. So the halacha is, if you're married for 10 years, as we mentioned, with no children, you're supposed to divorce your wife. However, the halacha is if you have one kid, then you don't have to divorce your wife. Why? After all, one kid is not a fulfillment of Peruvu. So the Netziv says that even though you only had one kid, although it's not a fulfillment of Peruvu, in the formal sense, it is a fulfillment of the mitzvah, Midabrei Sofim of Sheves, for which you don't have to divorce your wife. Now, what is this mitzvah of having children later in life, even after you fulfill Peruvu, to continue having children? Ba'erev al Tanach Yadecha, the Ramban says that it's not a real chiyuv to continue having children. It's ke'ein yishuv derech eretz. It's a good idea, but it's not a chiyuv d'rabbanan. With that, we can understand the Shver Rambam. Because Rambam says that after a person has a boy and a girl, she could be mochel, the wife could be mochel her ona. What do you mean? How could she be mochel her ona? Isn't there a chiyah for him to continue having children, as the pasuk and the neviim say, la'erev al tanach edecha? How could her mechila work? That's the Beis Shmuel's question. So according to the, we can have two answers. No, one based on what we just said. That even though he has this la'erev al tanach edecha still chal, but it's only an Eitzah Tov, it's not a real chiyuv. It's not an absolute chiyuv. Another answer to this question, how after a boy and a girl, she could be mochel, is not that she could be mochel to never have children again, but they don't have to be bo'al b'chol ona va'ona. Until Peruvu, they have to be bo'al b'chol ona va'ona to try to have children. But after they have a boy and a girl, it could be less frequent. Fine. Now let's talk about, I guess, a woman family planning or a woman's shibud to bear children. So there's a very important kula that Rabbi Willig suggests that after you did peruvu again, could a wife, you know, ask for more time? So the halacha is, the Rama says, in Yesh Lo Banim Harbe, and he has to get remarried, his wife dies, for example, he has, you know, 8 children, he's going to marry another woman, another, you know, 25-year-old girl, and she's going to have another 5 kids. There's going to be a lot of fights in the house between his 8 kids and her new 5 kids. So the halacha is, in that case, you're allowed to marry an isha she'ena bas banim. Wait a second, doesn't he have a mitzvah to have more kids? Why is he allowed to marry a girl she'ena bas banim? So says Rabbi Willig, Rama says, to prevent fighting. Says Rabbi Willig, if he's not married, because his wife just died, and you allow him to marry, to not have any more children, to prevent fights, certainly if he is married to a woman, and his wife doesn't want to have children, certainly we want to prevent the fights and allow her to not have fights with his wife. And therefore, if they did fulfill the mitzvah of Puravu, and a woman doesn't want to have any more children, she's not Mukhliyevis, it would be permitted not to, once they fulfilled Puravu. There would be room for that to prevent such fighting. Similarly, the Chasam Sofa says that once they... So even if a person is not fulfilling La'erev, fine, next point. Ramosha has a kula that if a woman is weaker than average in her pregnancy, she's weaker than a normal woman who's pregnant, yesh lahatir, to wait a little bit, even if they had only one kid, to give a little more time to wait before they have their second kid. And after they have a boy and a girl, after they fulfill peruvu for such a woman who's a weaker person, they could wait as much as 3 years. And, says Ramosh, if she's sickly, if she's mom sickly after peruvu, and she's a sickly woman, not just weaker than regular, but she's a sickly woman, then she could say that she doesn't want to have any kids, because the mitzvah of La'erev, to have more kids after you're ready to fulfill peruvu, does not require her to be sicker than a normal person. If they have a... What does it mean that she's sickly? So Ramosh means she's sickly. But if it's just that they have a special needs child, for example, Ramosh would say, so she should get help and continue to have more children. Rabbi Willig argues on Ramosh and says, no, even after one child, if there's a special needs child, there would be room to wait much longer. And again, if Hashem should protect us from such shyness. There is a shita from that is quoted in the name of Henkin, that based on the fact that in the time of Chazal, nursing caused a woman to not have any children for 2 years, that after a woman has a child, even the first child, for the first 2 years after having a child, even after the first child, even though there's no peruvu yet, one can wait for 2 years to have another child. And Rabbi Willig is make a like this opinion. However, Ramosha says there's no such heter. In Lita, we didn't have any such heter to allow 2 years after a child. That's the first child.
Didn't you just say before that Ramosha said that there's a heter for a couple of years after the first child?
That's if she's an unusual situation for a specific situation for a woman who is very weak, who's not a normal woman, because she has some issue, some weakness, some physical weakness that's not normal to a regular woman. I'm talking about a regular woman who just doesn't want it because she has... life happening, that Ramosha would not allow. Rabbi Willig would allow 2 years after a child, even before Peruvu. That's Rabbi Willig's kula, like Rav Henkin, not like Ramosha. Okay. Now that's the end of family planning. Let's now talk about if there is a heter to not fulfill the mitzvah of pravur sheves, and there is permission to delay. How can one delay? What means? What mechanisms could be used for the delay? So the most kaldikas thing would be, of course, the pill, because it doesn't involve any mechanical things with the zera. An IUD also is mutter. It's inserted entirely in a woman's uterus, and just the bia is a regular bia. A Mirena IUD is an IUD, an intrauterine device that stops her periods because of the, it's like it has hormones on it, and that also is a way to prevent, not only to prevent her from becoming pregnant, but also prevents her from getting her period. However, the post can say that if she gets a monthly drop, Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Willett say that monthly drop can make her need a daraisa, because that's what she sees every month. So that's just important to keep in mind. But again, as far as birth control, that also is a permitted means. Similarly, spermicide is also permitted because it's a regular maestabia. The spermicide just kills it when it gets there. A diaphragm is more complicated because on one hand, it blocks the zera, but on the other hand, the zera lands where it's supposed to land, just doesn't allow it to climb up, so there is room to be makel when it's necessary. And the worst situation, of course, is the condom, because that's not even... land, the zera is not even landing where it's supposed to land, so that would be the worst situation. Okay. Now, Rabbi Willig made one or two points at the end of this year in terms of not wanting to have children. People, a couple gets married and she's in school and he's in school and he has to finish smicha and he has to finish his residency, so they don't want to have children yet. They have to get more established and get more financially dependent. So Rabbi Willig has a few rayas from halacha that outlook is halakhically not okay. Number one, the Rambam writes, lo yisa ketana. Lo yisa ketana. Why? After all, in 2 years, if she's 10 years old, in 2 years she'll be able to have children. So apparently, lo yisa ketana. So Rabbi Willig says, if you marry a woman who's 22 years old, who's on the pill, that's the same thing as marrying a ketana. Number two, if you open up the Shulchan Aruch, which is what I always do when I ever Masad Kedush, and I open up the first line of Eben Ezer, and it says, mitzvah lisa isha kadei, Lifros Valerbos, the point of something like that, the point of getting married is to have children. And thirdly, the Rambam says that until you fulfill Puravu, the mitzvah is to be Boa B'chal Ona V'ona. So, if the mitzvah is a Puravu, is Mechayev, every Ona V'ona to be Boa in a way that you could have children, so obviously to get married and to be using birth control at the beginning would not fulfill that that responsibility.
What about that takes away fighting?
That the Rama said only after you fulfilled Puravu. The only times that Rabbi Willig is makel typically is when there's a letter from the psychologist. That's typically there's a lot to talk about, but typically if there's not a letter from the psychologist that there's some type of issues that are problematic, anxiety, depression, etc., and that would be typically the only case that he would be makel under normal circumstances. But if there are extenuating circumstances, then the situations of Baal Shuv are also a little bit different. Okay. To finish off, we'll stop there. Okay. Yeah.
Does anybody know where other folks can hold on that?
I'll tell you a story. My shul has is right wing YU and a little more to the right of YU and a little not really yeshivish but a little more to the right of typical YU. So I have a balabas from very from yeshivish background. He's a little not as yeshivish, but he's from very yeshivish background. And his daughter's getting married. He definitely didn't want his daughter to start having kids right away financially and to get ready. You know, going to law school. Someone was going to law school, she had to finish her school. And so he figured he'll ask, you know, the YU rabbi. He's not going to ask one of his rabbi, you know, where he comes, so he's going to ask the YU rabbi. So he comes to me and says, Rabbi Orlean, you know, I'm wondering, my daughter's getting married, and I don't think it's a good, you know, he says, in law school, she says, I told him, you know, Mr. So-and-so, I have an idea. You know, the Masorah that I have from my Rebbe at Yeshiva University don't allow, you know, birth control at the beginning of the match. But maybe go ask somebody from Lakewood. Maybe get a heter there. So that's what I told him.
And?
I'm just telling you a story.
Everybody knows that in Lakewood there are more maidens?
Ask the Shabbos.
Rabbi Willett said over that whole story where the guy
That's right. Okay, not for now. Okay, the next Shiloh, the next story that we'll talk about is, do you want to do Dina de Machlisadina or electricity? Dina de Machlisadina is a hard issue. Okay, maybe we'll do that. Fine. Dina de Machlisadina. So,
we only have 5 minutes. Do we should
do this year? Let's do...
We go over.
I'm not going to be able to stay for Mincha. Will you have Mincha here? Raise your hand if you have Mincha. Okay, so I'll do Dina de Machlisadina. It's good to get it done with because it's a very hard shiur. So first of all, what is the source for Dina de Machlisadina? The source is the Gemara that says, Kol ha'amur b'parshas melech, melech mutter bo, is a machlokas, whether that which the Torah says about a melech, melech is mutter bo, or melech can't actually do those things, but... by the story of Shmuel HaNavi warning Klal Yisrael that this is what a melech could do, is just to scare them, not actually to that a melech could do these things. The Shulchan Aruch passes like Shmuel, that whatever the Torah said, whatever the Psukim and Shmuel said that a melech could do to you, is what Dina de Machlisadina is. And what, among the things is that a melech has the right to tax, to impose taxes, and whether it's a Jewish melech, well, actually, that case was it is a Jewish melech, and it was in Eretz Yisrael. So you see that even a Jewish king and even in Eretz Yisrael, the government or the melech has the right to the government, because we're learning Dina de Machlisadina there, has the right to impose taxes. There's a famous Ran in Adarim that everybody from certain communities, not so much ours, likes to quote, that says, the whole reason why there's taxation is because the melech owns all the land, and if the melech owns all the land, he could throw you off the land if you don't pay rent to him for the land that you're using in his kingdom. But Klal Yisrael, says the Ran, all are own a chelik of Eretz Yisrael. The king, nobody could ever throw us off Eretz Yisrael because it's our land. And therefore the Ran says there should not be the right to anyone to charge you taxes in Eretz Yisrael. That is the Ran. And according to the Ran, you cannot obligate anyone to pay taxes in Eretz Yisrael. However, Rabbi Shachter points out that Ran doesn't even make it as a Yesh Omrim in the Shulchan Aruch for the Ramah. And Shulchan Aruch doesn't pass like that Ran. So it's a great Svara, but we don't pass them that way. Rabbi Shachter himself, as we'll see, has an interesting sheet of what the Chiv of taxes are. But if you look at the Ramah says explicitly that not paying tax is Gozel Minas HaMelech. The Melech has the right to charge taxes, and to not pay those taxes is Gozel Minas HaMelech. There's a question if Dina de Machlisadina is Drabanan or it's Daraisa. That's a good question. What it, Rabbi Shechter holds, a very unusual shita of, that he's the only one who holds, I think, like this, that taxes in America, in a democracy, in a fair democracy, are not considered, like the Rambam said explicitly, what taxes are. That's Gozel Menas HaMelech. Rabbi Shechter says the following, that there's a halach in Hilchos Shutvin, that if you're in a situation and you all share certain needs because of where you live or because of in your community, then the fact that you're all partners in this that have the same need, the majority of the people in that population could force the minority to do whatever is needed. So for example, if there's a community that doesn't have a mikveh, and the majority of the people want a mikveh, they could force the people who don't want to pay for a mikveh to have to pay for the mikveh. Says Rav Shechter, similarly, in America, we have something called a shutfus. Doesn't have to be Jewish or not Jewish. There's a shutfus called, we're Americans, we all need to be protected from the Russians. I live in New York State. That means I'm in a shutfus with all of the people in New York State, and we have to have roads. I live in Long Island, and everybody in Long Island needs we need a Nassau County Police Department. And therefore, even if I don't like police, or if I don't like roads because I don't know how to drive, or I don't like fighting Russia because I'm a peace lover, that doesn't matter. The majority of the people, as expressed through voting and a democratic process, want something. So therefore, we have the shutfin. They could charge for all the needs that the majority of the people want. So therefore, if you don't pay, have any kids in public school, the government can force you to pay taxes to fund the public schools because of Hilchas, not Gezel, not even Din de Machlisadina, as other posting sites, like the Ran, but rather because of Hilchas Shutfin, that you are obligated to do as a Shutf what the majority of the Shutfin and the Shutfis is, all the Shutfin of the inhabitants of New York State, they want to have public schools, so I have to be schlepped along, even though I'm paying private school tuition. So therefore, taxes in America are not based on Dima, not to enrich some king and to, you're stealing from the king, but rather it's a shutfus. And who's in that shutfus? Jews. Jews are in that shutfus. There are Jews in New York City or Nassau County or in New York State or in America. And if I don't pay my taxes, I'm stealing from the other shutfin, including Jews. And therefore, Rabbi Jonathan says it will be considered stealing from the other shutfin, including Jews. And that's the requirement to pay taxes. Now, let's see some of the next point. That was taxes. Let's see some of the things that Dina de Malchusa caused. Dina de Malchusa is something that defines money. For example, if you have a bunch of bandits or pirates who create a little, Indians on their Indian reservation, they want to mint money to use among themselves, that does not have a din of money. And there are certain halachas where money needs to be used. For example, Pidyon Ma'aseh Sheni, you need a matbeya that is minted by a government. In Hilchos Ribis, to define Peira and Tibba, those of you who learned Ezer Neshech and Hazaha, Mor Hazaha, so money is defined by the government. Thirdly, an Olas Ri'ya has to be purchased with Kesef. Kesef is only created by a government that is a legal government, and that's one of the parameters of Dina de Malchusa. Dina allows the government to create money. It's important to know, a next point, what are the limitations of Dina de Malchusa Dina? Dina de Malchusa Dina only applies, and there's so many people who don't know this. Everybody in the world knows of Dina de Malchusa Dina. People don't realize that it only applies when you have an interaction with a non-Jew. Between two Jews, there's no Dina de Malchusa Dina. And therefore, when you are interacting with a guy, so then we'll say the law of the land will be binding upon you. But between two Jews are not bound by Dina de Malchusa. You're bound by halacha. For example, I'll tell you an application of this. Let's say there's a machlokas between two people who happen to be brothers or brothers-in-law, and they're fighting about a Yerusha. So will they say, could you bring into account to the cheshbon what the laws of the land are? Absolutely not, because Yerusha is between two Jews by definition. And two Jews do not follow the law of the land. Two Jews follow halacha, choshen mishpat. Similarly, in the same way we say that Dina de Malchusa Dina does not apply between two Jews, Dina de Malchusa Dina also only applies to Mamonas and not to Yoredeya. So for example, if both of us, if there are laws about usury in America or in New York State, that doesn't mean I can charge interest because there's an issur. If there are laws about, you know, what hours you have to provide your workers, that doesn't tell me anything, but it's going to violate Hilchos Shabbos. So it doesn't impact anything that relates to issur. Rav Henkin has a chiddush, and he says that even though we just said that Dina de Malchusa Dina only applies between Jew and guy, there are very specific instances where Dina de Malchusa will be binding on two Jews in their interactions. And that is if something is done l'tikun ha-medina. So for example, let's say there's something like rent control. So if I am a landlord, a Jewish landlord, and I have a Jewish tenant, could I say I want to follow my own laws or the Beis Din's laws, or do we have to follow the New York City rent control laws? So says Rav Mehenkin, since rent control is an example of something that's the Tikkun HaMedina, therefore the two Jews would be bound by that. Let's say minimum wage. I could charge anything I want, because that's what Halacha says. I'm not bound by Dina de Malchusa Dina if my employee is a Jew. Says Rav Mehenkin, no, since minimum wage is the Tikkun HaMedina, therefore we will apply Dina de Malchusa Dina. Similarly, bankruptcy. Does halacha, if I borrow money and then a guy files bankruptcy, and I file bankruptcy, I don't have to pay my malva anymore? According to halacha, that's nonsense. But according to Dina de Malchusa Dina, there's the allowance for bankruptcy. So Rav Henkin says, since the concept of bankruptcy is the Tikkun HaMedina, therefore the laws of bankruptcy will apply and a Jew can declare bankruptcy. However, the person would say that you really should pay back. Even if you declare bankruptcy, you do have to pay back your malva yehudis. Okay. Another, that was Rav Henkin's scenario where Dina de Malchusa will apply between two Jews, if it's the Tikkun HaMedina, with a few examples. Now I'll tell you two other scenarios where Dina de Malchusa Dina will apply between two Jews. If the Shach says, if Halacha doesn't say what to do, so there is no Choshen Mishpat, there is no Shulchan Aruch to follow between two Jews, Halacha is silent about a certain situation, so then we will follow the Dina de Malchusa Dina. Comes the Chazon Ish and says, there's no such thing as Halacha not having what to say. You know, if you're either Pater, you're Chayav, Motzmichar, or Halay, if there's nothing to say, so don't do anything, there's no such thing as this Halacha is silent. Okay, the second case where the Shach says that we will apply Dina de Malchusa Dina between two Jews, which is a third general case. We had Rav Henkin said the case of Tikkun Amdir with all the examples. A second thing, which is the first of the Shach, if Halacha Sad, the Shach's second case, which is our third case, where you will apply Dinu D'Malchus Din Im between two Jews, is if both parties are Jewish, but the business that is deals with both Jews and non-Jews alike. So let's say a return policy. I have a store in Flatbush. I have Jews coming to my store, and I have Goyim coming to my store. So I want to have, let's say there are certain laws that govern returns or sales. So I'm going to have those laws apply to all the Goyim who walk into my store, and all of Choshen Mishpat and the Bati Din's halachos will apply to the Jews who walk into my store. That's unfeasible. So therefore, it's understood when anybody walks into my store, it's as though it was stipulated, it's the undana, that we will following Minhaga Medina, even the Jews who come into my store will realize that they will be governed by the laws of the Medina, because that's Ke'ilu Hisnu when they walk into this. So if I have Jewish and non-Jewish clients, it's Ke'ilu Hisnu that we're going to follow the Medina, the Makhus Medina. Okay, the last part of this shir is about Mesira. For Mesira, it's not as people think. Rosh Hashanah has a different take than a lot of other people. I think Rosh Hashanah is not like the Moshe in some of these cases. So you come out of YU, you think one way, and then you go out to the big wide world, and you find out that everybody else in the Frum community has a very different idea of what constitutes Mesira. But I'm presenting what Rosh Hashanah said, and if you want to learn Moshe's Tshuva, you're welcome to do that as well. So the Gemara says that a Beis Din has the ability to be makin v'onshin shalom min hadin, and the Ran says that applies even to a non-Jewish government. And we see that in a story that happened to Elazar ben Shimon, the son of Shimon bar Yochai, right? Last week, Elazar ben Omer. He was hired by the Roman government to find Jewish criminals, and the Roman government would sometimes give a death penalty to the robbers that he would find. You hear that? He's finding Jewish criminals and turning them to the Roman government, and the Roman government is killing those people who only did theft. So you see a lot of things. The Ran and the Shita Mekubetzes points out that you see that Mesira is not Aser. The story was that Eliyahu Navi saw Rebbe Elazar ben Shimon and said, why are you doing this? It's not a nice thing to do. Didn't say that it's Aser, but it's just not a nice thing for a good Jewish boy to do, to turn Jewish people over to the Roman government so that they could kill robbers. But nevertheless, the Gemara sounds like it's not Aser mitam Mesira. It's just not proper to do it. Why is it Taka Mutter? Because as long as the Goyim have a rule, the government has a rule, just like Beis Din Makim V'Onshin Shalom and Hadin, so do the governments have the right of Makim V'Onshin Shalom and Hadin. If part of Makim V'Onshin Shalom and Hadin is that because there's a lot of thievery, we're going to kill our thieves, then that's Makim V'Onshin Shalom and Hadin. And just like a Beis Din has that right to kill somebody who steals if they feel that they need to for the community, so too the government has that right. So, therefore, a Jew is permitted to inform the authorities, even if the Jew will be punished, as long as the Jew did something wrong that Halacha recognized. So if the Jew did thievery, so you could turn the Jew over to the secular government, even if the government is going to punish them much more than Halacha would punish them. Because that's Makim V'Onshin Shalom HaDin. However, let's say you'd send the Moser, this Jew, to the government, he'd be sent to state prisons. And everyone knows that in state prisons, where you're sentenced to be in jail for 3 years, you also get raped and beaten and all kinds of other terrible things. That's more than the government said you're supposed to get. Then you wouldn't be allowed to be Moser. That would be an Isser of Mesira.
Yeah, but anyone who gets that punishment from the government is going to get the same treatment.
No, but the government's punishment of Makin Shalom HaDin is that you should be in jail and locked up for 3 years, not that you should get beaten while you're in jail. So that's more than what the government wants to do, or what the government decided, and that would not be permitted. That would be Mesira. Similarly, Rosh Hashanah pointed out that the Shulchan Aruch says, if there's a Chil Hashem, if you don't testify, right? Let's say you don't want to testify against another Jew. It's a Chil, I don't want to testify against another Jew, it's Mesira. But if there'll be a Chil Hashem, that everyone knows a Jew is not testifying against Jew because of, you know, Judaism, that could be a Chil Hashem, and then you also don't have a Isra Mesira, you might be able to turn the person in. So again, Mesira is permitted. It's not, let me rephrase that. It's not called Mesira, which is something that's Aser, if the person is going to be punished fairly by a court. That's a fair judgment and a fair court decision. And there won't be a Chil Hashem. But there will be Mesira that's permitted, even if the person will get mamish punished more than he deserves, in two situations. the following case. If a person is Meitzer as a rabbi, for example, he's a pedophile, he's a ganav, he's an abuser, a con artist, then you could get clear him off the streets, whatever you need to do to clear him off the streets, even if he'll be punished much more than what the courts actually said. You send the pedophile to jail. In jail, they do a lot of terrible things to pedophiles. That's fine, because you have to get them off the streets. And similarly, Maka es Chavero, the Shulchan Aruch says. So if you see that a spouse or child is being abused, you could theoretically call the police, and that's not considered a seer, because it's Maka es Chavero to stop to protect the victim. Okay, that's the end of this year. We should be Zocha to... Okay, so we did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We did about half of the shiurim. If you want, tell me, you could raise your hands and tell me if you want me to do a Zoom on Monday. Okay, it looks like I'll do a Zoom on Monday or Tuesday. I'll email you. I assume at the same time or a different time on Monday or Tuesday?
Different time would be better for me, because I have other classes.
Yeah. Okay.
Same time.
Is 12 o'clock better?
I think so.
How's 12 o'clock? Raise your hand if 12 o'clock is better than 1 o'clock. Raise your hand if 1 o'clock is better than 12 o'clock. So let's say 12 o'clock, let's assume 12 o'clock on Monday, Bepashtus. I'll keep you posted.